Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 7, Episode 36. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd, who is out of town currently, is once again Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Wednesday. Happy November as well.
Yeah, happy November. I know this is not Steelers-related, but some big NFL news already this morning. North Turner, Dave, I don't know if you saw it, resigned as the Vikings offensive coordinator. Don't know the story behind that, but yeah, some big happenings today on this Wednesday.
Yeah, without turning this into Vikings Depot or whatnot, boy, that offense of the Vikings the last two games, really, really hurting, and poor offensive line play. The Bears did a good job at shutting down that run. You know, Alex, I've written a few times, you know, in that stat that I always like to tout, the adjusted net yards per passing attempt, that the Vikings have a defense worthy of making a deep run into the playoffs. The question is, you know, can Sam Bradford and the offense hold up their end of the deal?
I think that's the earliest you've ever gotten to plug that stat before, so congratulations.
I know people are tired of that stat, but I absolutely love that stat. And history, you know, it's hard to diminish the readability of that stat, if you will, and it's something I'll continue to do as long as it keeps having the trends that it has. Moving on to the Steelers, of course, Mike Tomlin met the media for his weekly Tuesday press conference, and you know, he went over the injury report, and I don't think we were overly surprised by anything he had to say. The status of Ben Roethlisberger is currently up in the air. Ben said on his radio show he's going to do everything in his power, as you would expect, to play in this game against the Ravens on Sunday. Mike Tomlin really didn't give much of a hint. I know a few players, well, you know, earlier in the week said, you know, I think it was maybe even Marcus Wheaton said he would probably be, you know, surprised a little bit if Roethlisberger plays. But, you know, we all know Roethlisberger and his history. Just when you think he's not going to play, he's going to play, and we'll see. And Mike Tomlin said that basically all the cards are going to be on the table, and that was kind of in response to him being asked that, and it's something that you and I talked about the other day as well too, Alex, was the fact that, is there a possibility that Ben maybe dresses for this game and serves as the backup to Landry Jones, you know, a la what happened late mm-hmm. last season against the Cleveland Browns? Where are you leaning right now? I mean, you think Roethlisberger is going to play in this one?
I do. I think Ben's going to play. Like I said on Monday's podcast, usually whenever it's kind of 50-50 with Ben, if you're going to do a coin flip, I usually lean towards him playing. I think it's probably what history tells us. I don't have the stats to back that up, but that's kind of how I feel. So, Tomlin, I think it's one of the first questions Tomlin had was asked, could he play? I think it was Stan Saverin that asked, could he be the backup and be active? But Landry Jones, of course, start. And Tomlin, you know, was open to it and didn't discount it. I'm not surprised by that. I don't think he would try to tip his hand to anything at this point. But I think it's still more likely, even though it happened last year, that either Ben's going to play or going to be inactive. And my ultimate guess is that, yes, he's going to play. And the bigger question is, and I know you've done the research to back this up, how effective is he going to be? He's got playing in Baltimore working against him. He's got coming off injury working against him. Both historically have not been kind to Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, and stats are just that. They're fun to look at. They're fun mm-hmm. to write about. They're fun to discuss. But, you know, every game is a new game, obviously. So with that said, you know, they're certainly a better team with them than they are without them, obviously. So I'm not sure we're going to learn much as the week goes on as far as the injury report. And that, of course, the first one of the week will come out later on today. I expect Roethlisberger to be limited today, to be limited on Thursday. And I think I'll be surprised at this point if he practices fully all week. He'll probably show up Friday as questionable, and we'll go into the weekend with the Friday Terrible podcast saying, is Ben Roethlisberger going to play? As far as the rest of the injury report goes, to hear Tomlin talk, it was pretty positive. I think everybody expects Marcus Gilbert back with that ankle injury this week. The same probably goes for Cameron Hayward in that hamstring. Safety Shamarco Thomas with a groin, while not a starter, they could certainly use Shamarco Thomas on special teams. Marcus Wheaton with that shoulder, I think they're expecting him back. And D'Angelo Williams with that knee, the same with him. Even though this knee problem with him has been ongoing for several weeks now, Mike Tomlin said when it comes to all those players, practice participation this week will be used as a guide. All the typical stuff that Mike Tomlin likes to say regarding injured players. Cody Wallace, Mike Tomlin said, was the only player that didn't get significant work last week, and I think there's a report by Damski from the Tribune Review this morning that Cody Wallace has implied that it appears inevitable he'll be put on IR this year. So we talked about which player might be either jettisoned via waivers or placed on IR. When and if Ladarius Green is activated back to this 53-man roster, it sounds like it could be Cody Wallace. And as far as Ladarius Green goes, Mike Tomlin really didn't give us much information or a heads up whether or not this will be the week that he's activated back to the 53-man roster, or if he might need another week.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with Green. I think that's truly anyone's guess at this point. I think they're going to, like Tomlin kind of uses the cliche, but it also has a kernel of truth to it. You're going to use, practice participation and quality of it and use that as your guide. The good thing with Green is if you need to give him another week, you certainly can. He's not counting against your 53-man roster right now, but I'm guessing that Cody Wallace's roster spot is going to be is being held on to until Green comes back, and once Green is activated, then Wallace will go to injured reserve and end his season.
Yeah, and I believe you just wrote about Cody Wallace on SteelersDepot.com. So, folks, Matthew wrote about that. So that's something to read as well too, up on Steelers Depot this morning. Let's see, did we miss anybody in the injury report? I think we got all of them right.
Yeah, Tomlin talked for maybe a little bit longer than usual yesterday, probably about 24 minutes, but I feel like the whole thing was just injury report related, and I didn't feel like we gained a whole lot of clarity from it. So I think it's progressing, but it's still not really sure who's all going to play this week, and we know we need it this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And Steeler fans, the mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging to figuring out whether or not Ben Roethlisberger is going to play this weekend against the Ravens. Let Craig Oxain guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams. Even if you live in Cleveland, if you're considering buying or refinancing a new home now or in the future, please give Craig Oxain a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. And with that, we move on to, there's a little bit of news related to the depth chart. Mike Tomlin always tells us don't pay attention to the depth chart, there was a semi-significant move, probably not totally surprising. Darius Heyward-Bey was elevated over Marcus Wheaton. Marcus Wheaton, of course, has missed several games so far this season because of a shoulder injury. When he has played, it hasn't been great. You're not surprised by this, are you, Alex?
No, not at all. And I think the expectation was, assuming that Eli Rogers is healthy / out of Tomlin's doghouse, if he was ever in it, that Wheaton was going to take a secondary role. But it is notable because, there's no reason for the team to really make a change. They're not required to. They're not really held accountable for it. So the fact that they did tells you something. But Hayward Bayes had a strong season, even if the numbers don't back that up. We know what he did last week, and he was a holding call away from a pair of touchdowns, which would have been the first two-touchdown game of his NFL career. He's a guy that's played all three spots, has been reliable, their best blocker, a vertical threat. In that whole rap about the bad hands, which, while it's true in the past, really hasn't been a major issue the last 2 years. I mean, that catch he had against New England, the touchdown that counted, was a fantastic grab that if Antonio Brown would have made it, it would have been a highlight reel and everyone would have been talking about it. So, I think it has a lot to do with what Darius Hayward Bay has done, and hats off to him, because I think he's definitely earned it.
And about Eli Rogers, Mike Tomlin was asked on Tuesday if him not playing against the Patriots was related to any kind of off the field issue, and Tomlin said it was not. Now, was that a matter of semantics?
I think he was being cute, and I saw a reader, and you responded to it. I think it was on the field because it was a walkthrough, so it was football related. But Tomlin was being very, very cute with it.
Yeah, and for those who may have missed it, there was a report out there that Rodgers missed a walkthrough prior to the Patriots game, and that may have not been the first time. He's been a little tardy there as well, too. Mike Tomlin was also asked if Rodgers is healthy, back in good standing with the team, and if he'll resume his role as a starting slot wide receiver moving forward. And Tomlin said he's healthy and he's continuing to work his way back from that foot injury and provide detail in his game. And obviously, he's a guy that's up for significant consideration in terms of participating in packages offensively. Yes.
Only Tomlin can say a player is healthy and working his way back from injury. It's the only guy that can play both sides of the fence.
I tell you, he is a wordsmith. He is 142 times the wordsmith that I am. And I think some people are getting a kick out of what he had to say about him. How much did they miss him, Rodgers, in the Patriots game?
I'm sure some, but I know Rodgers had the nice week one against Washington, but part of that was a little fluky. The touchdown was incredibly lucky, and I think Hayward Bayes done a great job in the slot. So, I think Rodgers, was obviously very impressive in camp and has earned his roster spot, but he's not a game breaker. Yak is pretty limited with that guy, and usually with the slot guys, you want someone that can be a much better Yak threat. Maybe a little, just to have another healthy guy out there, but I don't think a lot. I think they have confidence in what Hayward Bay is able to do, and I think Hayward Bay did a nice job in the slot.
You think we'll see him play at least 20 snaps against Baltimore, Eli Rogers?
Yeah, I think he's probably going to play at least 20. I think he's going to get back to more of a week one kind of role. It still is a little crowded, though, especially now that the group's getting healthier. I mean, Sammy Coates will probably be a lot closer to full health. Marcus Wheaton, I think Marcus Wheaton might be the odd man out right now, but he could still get a couple snaps in there. So, I think it'll be similar to week one when you weren't really sure of the snap count, and I think they're going to let Rodgers have a chance to bounce back and see what he can do. So I think 20 to 25 snaps sounds about right for Eli Rodgers.
Are you concerned about that finger with Sammy Coates at all? I mean, it, obviously the last couple of games he hasn't done one catch, and I believe that was a wide receiver screen. I think he's been targeted something like five times so far. Mm-hmm. I mean, this offense is needs that deep threat. I mean, that's obvious, and Darius Hayward Bay can provide that for you. But make no mistake, the production that Sammy Coates had deep, in those first several games, they missed that right now.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of weird because Hayward Bay definitely has the best wheels of this team, so it's not like they don't have any other deep threat, but something about Coates, I think he's just his body type. I think he just might be a little bit better of a route runner. I know it's kind of weird to say for a second-year guy, but I think just in terms of being able to get on top of routes and stacking cornerbacks, I think he just has some better nuances in the stem of his route to be a more vertical threat. I think he's a more explosive guy. Well, I think Darius Hayward Bay has better top-end speed, but I think getting up to speed, the acceleration is better with Coates. So am I concerned? Yeah, I don't know exactly where he's at. I know I think he had a report to Fowler or one of the usual beat guys, and we had written about it, that Coates was feeling good and feeling a lot better. So he needs to have an impact role because you got to get some chunk plays out of him. So hopefully he's back. I don't know what his status is, but if that finger's still bothering him, Mike Tomlin, Danny Smith, take the guy off being a gunner. I don't get it. Against New England, he played gunner the entire game, after every play, you could see him kind of messing with his hand because it still was bothering him. Why are you asking your receiver to make tackles when he's got a bum hand? It's just it was a little unusual to me.
When you talk about the defense, which is the big concern, you know, heading into this second half, I think more so than the offense. I mean, obviously, we're all worried about Ben Roethlisberger right now. But when he does resume playing again, I think this offense, I think most people would agree that this offense should be able to get back on track and at least average over 25 points a game. The question becomes, can the defense hold up their end of the bargain as well, too? I wrote a pretty detailed article about how I think this run defense will improve significantly, and really, how can they not? But but with them getting Cameron Hayward back on the field, and the funny thing is this it probably shouldn't have caught me or anybody by surprise. How few of snaps Hayward and Shazier have been on the field at the same time for so far during the first seven games. Of course, Shazier missed that time with the knee injury, and then Cameron Hayward goes down. Is it right to speculate that, you know, this run defense should get, you know, significantly better if both these players can stay on the field moving forward?
Well, I mean, obviously you're going to get, you know, two of your arguably most talented players on the field at the same time. So I think, yeah, it's going to get better. But I've said about it before. I know it sounds super cliche, but run defense is truly an 11-man kind of job. And I think some of the issues the Steelers are having runs a lot deeper than just not having the talent and not having one particular player out there, whether it needs to be more physical. Gap integrity, gap sound, assignment sound has been a big issue for the Steelers' run defense, and I think probably the number one issue you could say is a lack of, you know, run integrity and gap integrity, and then some issues with physicality and just getting off blocks and things like that. So it's going to be a help. I mean, there's no debate about it. You posted the numbers that show whenever both those guys were on the field that the Steelers' run defense had done well. But I think there's probably some caveats, you know, that you can always add to any kind of study like that. You know, game situation and circumstance and teams you're facing and things of that nature. But I think it's going to be a help, but I think the issues are run much deeper than that, to be honest.
And here's another, you know, aspect that I found during the research of your defensive charting as well, too, that Robert Golden was only on the field for 104 of those 125 non-penalty plays that Shazier and Hayward were both on the field for. So you're talking about three players, you know, here, all at, you know, different levels of the defense that have not played a lot of snaps mm-hmm. together, that we all hope, you know, we'll play a lot more for the second half of this season. And while it's just a small sample size to work with, when all three of those players, talking about Hayward, Shazier, and Golden, have been on the field together, opposing offenses have only rushed for 3.04 yards per carry on, you know, like I said, small sample size, 25 total attempts. And 23 of those 25 rushing attempts came in the Steelers' first two games. So the good news, I think, especially where I'm probably hedging my bet a little bit here, as they play the Ravens this week, and the Ravens have not been good running the football as well. So, you know, look, if you give up more than 100 yards on the ground in this game to the Ravens, odds are probably things aren't going to work out in the Steelers' favor here. But that's one thing that I think where, you know, we've had a lot of, I know I'm guilty of it as well too, a lot of negative talk about this defense so far, especially related to that stat that I always like to tout. But there is room for improvement in this defense, and it starts up front with stopping the run first, and that's something mm-hmm. that needs to start in Baltimore. Now, you also, Keith Butler had some comments about, you know, blitzing and all like that, that you kind of drilled down, and you're not so sure Keith Butler was telling the truth there.
Well, I think, you know, there's two sides to every story, then there's the truth in the middle. So, you know, Butler is basically saying, and he said it before, but I think he was more explicit about it, and it just caught the eyes of more people, so that's why I decided to write about it now, was that basically they're not blitzing as often – because they have so much youth in the secondary, because of Artie Burns, because of Sean Davis. They need to protect those guys more, so they're being more passive. And while I can understand that to an extent, and there is a kernel, again, that kernel of truth that's in there, whenever Burns and Davis are both on the field, the blitz rate drops way, way down to about 7% of the time. And keep in mind, for this study, we're using Butler's standard of five-man pressure, not our own standard, which can vary a little bit. But the bottom line is that Burns and Davis, let me make sure I have the number on it here. Burns and Davis have only been on the field together 72 passing plays this season. That's less than a quarter of the entire time. And if you look at time where just one of the rookies is on the field, the blitz rate goes up some, but not even close to where it was last year. It's still about a 10 to 15% drop. So, you know, the idea that because there are so many rookies on the field, it doesn't really hold water. And just because there's one rookie on the field, would it really change the Steelers' philosophy so much so? You look at a team last year that had a Ross Cockrell, who was basically a rookie, had never played an NFL regular season snap before, was signed on September 5th, got thrown into the offense a couple weeks in. Steelers blitzed like crazy. Same with Brandon Boykin. You talk about bad tacklers, Antoine Blake, injury. We all know his story, bad tacklers. Butler blitzed anyway. He's an admittedly aggressive guy. So Butler's comments wasn't enough when backed up with the data to really say that, yeah, that's the number one reason why the blitzing has decreased so much. You can check out the whole article on SteelersDepot.com posted yesterday. It made some sense, but not nearly enough to me, at least.
And I think someone said everybody's hating on the acquisition of Justin Gilbert. Well, they obviously didn't listen to the podcast the other day because, I mean, you're in the camp of thinking that, you know, it might be time for Justin Gilbert to get a few more snaps.
Yeah, written about that before as well. I think keeping Burns in the way of Sean Davis and keeping him more of maybe a dime role would be best, just to help kind of limit some of the things, some of the issues he's having in the run game right now, and in coverage as well. His coverage hasn't been great, you know, until he kind of reps it better in practice each week and gets a little better above the neck. I think that might be a way to go. So, you know, because although, of course, cornerbacks are not your number one guys to stop the run, as I've talked and written about many times before, I think a lot of the good runs that have become great runs, the runs that have gone 20-plus, a lot of that has to do with secondary problems, not keeping a lid on those things and stopping those runs from being the big, you know, chunk and double chunk kind of plays.
Also, during his Tuesday press conference, Mike Tomlin made sure to recap the failed interceptions that this this defense has had so far, and we've seen it. There hasn't been many of those opportunities, but there's been enough that you know could have produced some game-changing plays. What did you think about his comments related to them needing to capitalize on those chances?
Yeah, some Steeler fans seem to take exception with it, though I think some fans sometimes just take exception with anything Tomlin says, that he felt like Tomlin was throwing players under the bus and calling them out. I think he was just identifying some pretty obvious situations, and, you know, he pointed out the William Gay interception or drop interception against Miami in the first quarter, the Ross Cockrell one, which happened way back in week one. Not that those would have been made the numbers look any better, but, you know, the Miami one, if Gay picks it off and runs it back, Steelers could very well end up winning that game. It probably wouldn't have been pretty, but they could have done it. Who knows what happens from there? So I think it just pointed to some obvious situations that, you know, that you have to capitalize on the opportunities that you do get. I don't think he was incorrect to say that. I think it's a pretty obvious point to make. Now, I think that, sure, you know, could the team be put in better position to get turnovers and things of that nature? Yeah, they could be. And I think it goes back to a lack of pressure and a lack of blitzing and kind of everything like that. It's no surprise that the Steelers secondary, while certainly far from the best last year, was, I think, tied for 6 in interceptions with 17. And it was because they had 48 sacks. It was because they blitzed a ton and they sent a lot of fire zones. They sent a lot of unique looks. Those are the things that help create turnovers if your secondary is not a shutdown kind of group. And this group wasn't last year, and it still isn't this year. So I think there was another element to that that Tomlin didn't talk about, though he's talked about it in the past. I mean, it's not that, you know, he's never taken responsibility for it before. But, you know, there's certainly more than just the couple of opportunities players have to make plays.
You know, stats can be manipulated you know, at times to present or carry whatever narrative you want to go along with them. I wrote about deep passing stats this past week, and while it's true that the Steelers haven't given up many balls over their head when it comes to deep passes and talking more than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage. The fact of the matter is that they haven't been tested deep that often. Mm-hmm. And when they have been tested deep, they're not doing a good job defending those. So you know, it's kind of a stat that you can frame it one way. Hey, they're not getting beat deep. But the fact of the matter is, why would teams throw deep on the Steelers right now, right?
Yeah. And like you said, the times that they've had success. Yeah, it's all about kind of the idea of death by a thousand paper cuts. And if they're going to, if the Steelers are going to give the underneath throw, teams are taking it now. They're not going to run the football at you and put themselves behind the sticks. Although running the football right now has been pretty easy for teams the past 2 weeks. So, you know, this team did a nice job early on in the season. Got to find ways to get back to that. I don't have a great answer for it, but yeah, it's kind of been worst of everything right now.
We're going to be having our for listeners, we're going to be having our buddy John Eisenberg from BaltimoreRavens.com on in the second half of this show to preview the upcoming game and get his thoughts on the Ravens. But ahead of that, Alex, I know you've already started watching a lot of film on the Ravens, and I've started my tape research as well too. What is one thing on the offensive side of the ball and one thing on the defensive side of the ball when it comes to the Ravens that has you most concerned heading into this weekend?
Yeah, I've seen more of the offense than I have the defense. I'm going to get to the defense probably once we've wrapped up the podcast today. But, you know, I think offensively, there's still a team that's going to throw the pass interference ball, the 50-yard shot downfield, and hope for either a splash play or a reception or for a call. And Mike Wallace still has great speed, although Mike Tomlin's talked about how they've used Wallace differently in a more variety of ways than teams like Pittsburgh has in the past. He's still a huge vertical threat. If you try to press him and play without much of a cushion, he's got a great release, Wallace does, and he can create separation. And once he gets even with you, he's leaving, as the old saying goes, if they're even, they're leaving. So they have a great vertical attack. They get some big plays downfield. I forget the exact stat of 40-plus yard completions, but it's a pretty high number. And then the other element, too, is just Dennis Pitta, who I asked John about, and he's done a great job of bouncing back and been a really big part of that offense.
The thing is, and part of my research is really overall this season, Joe Flacco hasn't been great connecting with the deep ball. You know, it's just when he is, it's going.
Yeah, it's the volume of it, though, that you have to defend it 6 to 8 times per game. And if they hit two of those, then it's a good day for him.
Right. And I think he's right around, 28% or something I wrote as far as completion percentage, as far as passes thrown more than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage. And believe it or not, I think Mike Wallace leads the way with deep pass receptions. Mm-hmm. With 6, and I kind of expected that number to be a little bit higher. Now, they've obviously haven't had Steve Smith the last couple of weeks. He's a deep threat, and their young receiver, Perriman, hasn't progressed the way they probably have. You know, were hoping that he would when they drafted him as well, too. So deep threats, obviously. Look, we just talked about it. The Steelers have a tough time defending that deep pass, and I expect we'll see a few deep balls from Flacco on Sunday. You think they're going to leave these cornerbacks on sides, or do you think a guy like Cockrell will follow a guy like maybe Wallace around?
I mean, it's possible. They're obviously willing to follow, but I don't think the Ravens have a big enough threat to warrant that. So I think the idea, maybe keep things a little more simple for the defense, let them play faster, might be ideal. So it wouldn't shock me either way, but my guess is no, they're not gonna do that. Each guy, you know, again, there's not a marquee number one threat here, but they're all cut from a similar cloth. Like you said, Steve Smith can be a deep threat, Mike Wallace can be a deep threat, Perriman can be a deep threat, Chris Moore, who we haven't talked about yet, who hasn't done a whole lot this year, but he's a guy that didn't run well but was one of the best deep threats in college football last year at Cincinnati. He just has a knack for separating at the top of his route and adjusting to the football. So while I think he ran a 4.5, he was a yards per catch machine, well over 20 yards I believe last year. So you know, there's a lot of guys to to worry about there. Real quick, defensively, to get back to your question, Dave, I would just say that interior defensive line continues to be strong. Timmy Jernigan, Brandon Williams, John talks about one of the rookies that they have that's a threat. So trying to run against them, trying to run on the interior, and then as in the passing game, the A gaps and things of that nature, you know, avoiding having the pocket collapse are all going to be again recurring issues for this Pittsburgh offense.
If they get Marshall Yanda back this week, I assume we're going to see a little bit of outside zone as well too, and they've killed the Steelers in the past with that.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I remember Justin Forsett just last year, I think, even right, they're running all over him. So and they might get Ronnie Stanley back too. They probably will. So that's they're going to get. It's like the Dolphins game. The offensive line is going to get a lot healthier, and we saw what happened against Miami.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know they're going to pound the football, obviously, as well with Terrence West and all. We talked earlier about Ladarius Green, but we didn't really talk about what we think might happen this week. I think, and I kind of said this right from the start, I think it's going to take him a couple of weeks from the time he started practicing to get back on the field. And you know, with Roethlisberger not really being a full go this week in practice once again, I mean, I'm going to bet that we're going to wait until the Dallas game until we see Green. Do you concur?
I don't disagree. I mean, I if you take either side of the argument, it would be impossible for me to disagree with you. I think you make the good point, though. We're not talking about a guy that did something in training camp or you know, something like that and then got hurt. We're talking about a guy that hasn't played a down of football since, what, January. And he hasn't, you know, he's just getting back to practice, you know, now. So you're talking about months and months, you know, a 10-month span between last playing football and last really working out. In a practice setting to now, and that can't be forgotten about at a time like this. So, you know, talking about getting into football shape and conditioning, it's not something that can be cured in a week of practice. So I don't know what's going to happen. Again, it wouldn't shock me if they have to wait another week, though. I hope that the Ben will he won't he play doesn't influence that, because although you might say that for the Patriots game, which I didn't really agree with, I want to get the Ferrari out of the garage even if I'm not driving it. You know, I want someone to drive it. I want to see it out there. So hopefully Ben's status doesn't impact Green and they look at it just face value and what Ladarius Green can and can't do.
Well, before we get to John Eisenberg, your thoughts on the Patriots trading Jamie Collins to the Browns?
It's just if it was any other team, we'd probably yell at the team trading Collins and say, "What are you doing?" But it's Bill Belichick, so you always give him the pass. You know, it just seemed like that Collins was going to be a free agent after this year, wants big money, and you know, Belichick didn't want to deal with that. And I heard some comments about Collins was kind of a freelancer, a little Shazier like. So. I just hate having to see Collins two more times this year. He's a good player, and it's going to be a headache.
Yeah, and you know that conditional pick, there's a lot of conditions set forth on it. So, you know, a good move for both teams. We'll see. Obviously, if the Browns are unable to re-sign him, then I think that lowers the compensation that the Patriots receive moving forward. And as you mentioned. And look, and we've talked about him a few times on previous podcasts leading up to the game against the Patriots. London Roberts is no joke, right? I mean,
he's fantastic.
I mean, that was a guy that I know I looked at during the pre-draft process, and I know you did as well too. That you got a guy that you're probably trying to get on the field as much as you can, and when you have a guy that you're probably not going to be able to resign during the offseason in Jamie Collins, even though that you probably could stand to get a compensatory pick for him. You know, if he did leave during free agency, talking about with the Patriots, the thing is he could suffer a serious knee injury the next game as well, too, and then not get absolutely nothing. So I kind of understand why Bill Belichick did it. But on the flip side, it was kind of a shocking deal, and I'm with you. I don't look forward to the Steelers playing Jamie Collins two more times moving forward.
Yeah, last question from me to you, Dave. No surprise, Steelers require the deadline. Is there any thought about trading Wheaton? Did you think that could happen, should happen? Any idea there?
Man, I'm not shocked at all. You know, when it comes to them. And you know, if Wheaton had done anything in the first first seven games, you know, maybe, but even so, you're talking about a situation where it would have probably resulted in a conditional pick, because Wheaton is in the final year of his contract. So whatever team that would have supposedly traded for Wheaton, they would have had to have a clear defined role for him during the second half of the season. They would have had to probably been pretty sure that they could have, you know, and would have been able to re-sign him, because essentially at this point right now, you know, with a guy in his last year of his contract, you're talking about a rental player. And unless that player can be a difference maker and be a player that puts you, quote unquote, over the top, you know, but, you know, we're talking about a, it takes 11, as you mentioned earlier, it takes 11 men on offense and defense. And yes, there are guys that can take over games and make huge impacts week to week. Marcus Wheaton's not one of those guys. So, you know, Wheaton won't be back with the Steelers next year. I'm pretty sure about that. And we'll see what he gets. The Steelers might end up getting a sixth or seventh round compensatory pick in the long run. And my thoughts on that is you can never have too much cheap experience depth. And that's and especially at the wide receiver position right now with the Steelers. So, no, I'm not surprised at all. I would be surprised if the Steelers even received a call for Marcus Wheaton.
Yeah, no, I think they would have had to actively shop him. I thought Philadelphia might have been the only place just because there's some connection there with some Pitt Panthers guys and, you know, their need for a deep threat. They were looking into Torrey Smith and guys like that. My last thought, though, just came out over the wire. This is Ravens-related, but Steve Smith remained sidelined at practice today, so his status is not looking super strong right now for the Steelers
game. That's going to disappoint Mike Mitchell, isn't it?
I think it is. I think Mitchell's going to find him in pregame and say, "Why aren't you ice up, son?" You
know, he's ice up. You know? There you go. That's a great way. That's a great time now to segue into our talk with the great John Eisenberg from BaltimoreRavens.com. Stay tuned for that. Okay, welcome back. It's Wednesday, and it's Ravens Week Wednesday, and of course, everybody knows what that means. We have a beat writer from the opposing team on the show, and the next today's guest, people should not need an introduction for, because he's been on several times. He's probably our most popular, well, he is our most popular guest all time, and he probably leads, if this was Saturday Night Live, he would lead in appearances on the show as well, too. I'm, of course, talking about John Eisenberg, who covers the Baltimore Ravens for the team's official website, author of 8 books with more on the way. You can follow John on Twitter at @BMoreEisenberg. John, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here. If it's Saturday Night Live, sorry, no political impression.
I hear you. Another week, another week, and we can hopefully we can get back to real life here, regardless of the outcome. John, you know, Ravens Steelers week here. The both teams kind of, well, they do enter the game on downtrends. The Ravens started off the season 3-0 and have lost their last 4 heading into the bye. The Steelers are 4-3 coming off of 2 losses. Both teams really have battled that injury bug quite a bit this year, and you know, I know it's easy for both teams to kind of point to that, but you know, with that aside, What has been your overall impressions of the Ravens through their first 7 games? You know, what are they doing good? What are they not, you know, doing well at all?
Well, yeah, injuries have definitely been a part, but and that was certainly a big story last year. It's a bit of a story this year. There's less inclination among the fans, among a lot of people, to sort of hold that up as the reason, because the Ravens they went with a lineup this year that had some older guys in it, and a lot of their older guys have been gotten injured. So that's sort of what happened. Just a little less patience with that this year. But regardless, big picture, what's going on with the Ravens primarily? The real problem has been the offense. The defense has held up pretty well. I mean, it has not been certainly a shutdown Ray Lewis type of defense. However, you know, it's close to the top 10 in a lot of the metrics, very strong against the run, and mostly susceptible to a few big plays. Otherwise, the defense has been pretty good, and Eric Weddle has been a nice addition in the back end, and he's helped solidify the secondary to some degree. And Zach Orr is a guy that was an undrafted free agent that they replaced Darryl Smith with, and I had my doubts about him. He's a third-year player, and he's the leading tackler and has played some excellent football. They're creating a lot more turnovers than they did a year ago, which was a huge problem. And the pass rush has been off and on. I mean, Terrell Suggs was out. He's back, I think, for the Pittsburgh game. Elvis Dumervil has not been playing. So the pass rush is in the hands of some young guys, and it's up and down. But generally speaking, the defense has kept the Ravens in every game. The problem has been the offense, and there are many, many problems with the offense. They've already fired their offensive coordinator this year, Mark Trestman. Marty Morningwig is now calling the plays, and it's just been a real problem. Joe Flacco has not played well. He's coming off a knee injury, first injury of his career, serious knee surgery and a rehab. But he looked really good in training camp. He looked really good in the preseason, and a lot of people thought he was in for a big year this year. It has not come to fruition. His mechanics have been thrown off. He's thrown off his back foot a lot. He's only thrown 5 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and he's just not been great. And there are excuses. The running game has been off and on. And really 1 week good. It was completely shut down in their last game against the Jets. And the passing game with Flacco sort of having an off year or not that great has been very much up and down. There's some good things are going on. Mike Wallace, the former Steeler, is having an excellent year. He's been a nice deep target. And there have been some decent things going on. But this is an offense that has only scored 10 touchdowns in 7 games. So there's your problem with the Ravens right there.
We might need an extra 15 minutes with you here for you to describe to our listeners what defensive sacks and defensive turnovers are, because I'm not sure we remember what those are. But yeah. But getting back to the offense here, if you would have told me, at the midway point of the season for the Ravens that Mike Wallace had 35 receptions for 490 yards, first on the team in yardage and second on the team in receptions, I wouldn't have believed you at all. But that's the case, and I don't know if it was a backhanded compliment or what. I think Mike Tomlin tried to rephrase some things yesterday when talking about Mike Wallace, but he has really surprised me with what he's been able to do in Baltimore so far this season. What have you noticed about the Mike Wallace that you knew before versus the Mike Wallace that you have now in Baltimore?
Wallace, certainly when he was with Pittsburgh, he was a deep threat and a good one, and certainly hurt the Ravens plenty. And then in the succeeding years after he left Pittsburgh, I came with the Ravens, played him, and he was in Miami, and he wasn't going deep at all. And then Minnesota, certainly with Teddy Bridgewater last year, they didn't use him as a deep threat at all. What I've seen here is a well-rounded receiver. I have to tell you, there has not been one thing wrong with him from the moment he has set foot on the practice facility, anything. He's been a good teammate. He's been helpful with the young guys, and they have Rashad Perryman here, a young guy who's struggling. And Mike has really taken him under his wing and tried to get him up to speed. And so he's been a good guy. Now, as far as, on the field, really, I think what got Mark Trestman fired was that they were not using that's what Flacco does as well as anybody is throw a deep ball. And they were not trying that. They weren't using that aspect of their offense, and they have it with Wallace. And so since Trestman was fired, they've been throwing more deep passes. He's caught 2 or 3 at 50 yards. So, he's added the thing that I think he's best at. But, all along, he's run some nice mid-range routes. He's gotten open. He hasn't dropped many passes. He's just been solid and an all-around solid receiver. I guess Pittsburgh fans are surprised to hear that, but he has nice chemistry with Flacco, and it's just gone well. That's one of the few things that's gone really well on offense this year.
John, sticking with the offense, one thing that's kind of been, probably you could say, hasn't gone well and been inconsistent at best is this run game. I know you've had a lot of different faces in the backfield, from Justin Forsett, who's now with Detroit, to Taliaferro, to Buck Allen. Have you seen more significant improvements now that Terrence West is, I think, taken more an active role as the lead back in this offense, or is the issue still blocking, or West not playing up to par? Have you seen improvements, and how does this run game get better for Baltimore?
Yeah, definitely. West has been the number one guy for about the last three games, and he's produced pretty well. Now you have to throw out the last game again. The Jets completely shut them down. The running game went nowhere. It's like the worst rushing game in the history of the franchise.
Oh wow!
So so nothing happened there. Now before that, he'd had a couple of good games, and so yeah, Terrence West has been a surprise. He's been really good. They had a whole pack of running backs, and they were hopeful that one of them would sort of pop. You know, they had Forsett, Terrence West, all those names that you mentioned. They were hoping one of them would take the job and become a difference maker. West is on the verge of doing that. He has not gone over the top. He's just not an A caliber back. You know, it's more of a B caliber back. I mean, he's not a Le'Veon Bell, but He's done okay. And so I think what needs to happen going forward is, I mean, the offensive line has been decimated here by injuries, and including one, I mean, Marshall Yanda, who's probably the best player on the team, honestly, you know, the offensive guard, Pro Bowl, all pro, best offensive lineman in the league, according to Pro Football Focus last year. He missed a couple games with a shoulder injury, and honestly, that has to be a serious injury, because he played through an entire season with a shoulder injury a couple of years ago. He's a very tough guy, so you know it was bad. But he is expected back. And Ronnie Stanley, the first pick there, the Ravens' highest draft pick in 13 years, number 6 overall, offensive tackle, started the first three games, played well, but has been out for 4 weeks with a foot injury. He is also expected back on Sunday. So in order for the running game to get together, they have to get those two guys back and get some sort of consistency going in that offensive line, because otherwise they're really just overmatched up front, and it's hard to run the ball that way.
Sticking again with the offense, when I watch this Baltimore team, I've been watching the last couple of days, you know, like you said, I think there's a couple of things they do really well in offense. They can throw the football vertically. I think they're doing a great job of getting Dennis Pitta involved in this offense. He's one of your key third down targets, having a nice season. And of course, we know his story, missing all of last year, trying to work his way back. How does he look now compared to pre-injury, and what is his role in this offense?
He looks the same. I mean, that's another thing that's gone well on the offense this year. Pitta, of course, he's Flacco's best friend off the field, and they have great chemistry on the field. And that's just been a surprise. People thought his career was over, but it was apparent in training camp that you could just watch him and say, unless something goes wrong with his hip again, he's going to be back, and he's going to catch balls because Joe's going to throw to him. So he's been good. He's been really good. And so, you know, he's not the greatest blocker. He's not the most forceful guy up front. They need some help. They need to help him sometimes there. And teams that have had some success in slowing him down have gotten very physical with him on the line. That works to some degree. But he's a good third down guy. And, you know, it's a nice story. He's a good guy. And it looked like his career was over. And he's back and playing well. And that's another one that has nice chemistry. It's Wallace and Pitta so far this year as the main receivers.
When you look at the absence of Steve Smith, and I know he's chomping at the bit to play in this game because he wants to make sure he reacquaints himself with Mike Mitchell there. You know, the ankle injury, you know, what's the word on that? Is it coming along? Is he expected to play? And I know you've run down a few of the other guys who have missed time, but who are you not expecting to be able to play in this game due to injury?
Well, Elvis Dumervil, I think, is one that I do not think will play. He might have a serious injury. I mean, the Ravens are being coy about it. There's not, and Elvis is as well. It's hard to tell exactly what's going on. But it's not good news when you come back for a game or two and then you're out again. And I just think he had a foot injury in the off season. There was surgery, and it's just not coming around. So I think that's the situation there where you're looking at, I don't know what they're going to get from him this year. Most of the other guys, they're expecting back. So that is the storyline in Baltimore during the bye, is that, you know, a huge injury list, and hopefully, you know, most of them will return. So we'll have to see. I mean, it's a sad state of affairs when the injury report is the big news. However, that is the case. That is the case. And Steve Smith is expected back. And he's he's a difference maker. He was having a good season. Of course, came out of retirement to come back, but he still is very strong. He's made big plays. He's a great guy to have in the huddle. You know, he's chirping with you talk about his interactions with the other team. There's so many of them, I lose track of them, to be honest with you. You know, he's always chirping with somebody, fighting with somebody. But it's a good edge that he brings to the team. They don't really have it otherwise. And so they really hope that he'll come back and be a difference maker starting Sunday.
When you look at this overall defense, top to bottom, I mean, they're not playing bad. And I did some research and posted about their deep passing play so far this year, and they've actually done a good job when defending the deep pass. And you would probably expect that with guys like Jimmy Smith and Eric Weddle and Ladarius Webb roaming around back there. They've been able to get after the passer somewhat, and they've been fairly decent against the run. So I guess with that said, and you know, we don't know if Ben Roethlisberger is going to play in this game, but the Steelers' offensive game plan, while it might not change much with Landry Jones under center, it goes without saying that Roethlisberger executes that offense better. Everybody knows that. But I guess in short, my question would be, is what's the best way to kind of attack this Ravens defense right now?
Well, where the Jets had luck, and the Giants too, is turning short gains into long ones. It's a pretty good cover group. It's not a super fast group. And what Beckham did and what the Jets did was, turn a 12-yard catch into a 65-yard touchdown. So that's where you've seen them be vulnerable. They have not, as you alluded to, have not let the ball get over their heads. Been very good at that. I mean, Weddle is really good at that, keeping that from happening. However, what we've seen is, you know, completions that have turned into long gains with the poor – with the defenders lacking the speed and also taking poor angles. And so that's how you can move the ball on this team and create big plays that really can win the game for you.
I know that you said that Suggs is expected back for this game. He's leading the team right now with 5 sacks. But who else should Steeler fans be worried about from a pass rush standpoint? Who are your marquee guys? Is it still Jernigan, Brandon Williams? Is there a new face that might not be getting a lot of sacks but is getting a lot of pressure? Who's the biggest pass rush threat right now?
Well, they have – I mean, Jernigan has definitely taken a step forward from last year. He's turned into a real nice player up front. Brandon Williams, of course, is very strong. He's going to make a lot of money in the offseason. Somebody's going to pay him a lot. I'm not sure it's going to be the Ravens. Is a real nice nose tackle up front. So they've got nice interior. The pass rush has come primarily from the interior. Suggs has 5 sacks, which looks good. He has not really been a steady in the quarterback's face guy. They have a whole bunch of young guys that they're trying to bring along because Suggs is 34 and Dumervil is 32, and they know they have to move it along and get new guys. Za'Darius Smith, Matt Judon, Kamale Correa. These are names that you're going to hear on Sunday. That's what the Ravens are trying to breed the next generation of outside linebackers into 3-4. As with a lot of young guys, you know, it's an up and down process. Mm-hmm. Za'Darius Smith's played a ton of snaps for this team this year, and he just doesn't have that many statistics. He's out there trying. There's just not that much going on. The last game against the Jets, he was pretty good. He had a sack, he deflected a pass, and he's starting to come around a little bit. Correa and Judon are rookies, and Correa was second round, Judon was fifth round, and actually they've gotten more production out of Judon. He's a big Division II guy
yeah.
who they took on size and potential, and he's physical and tough and has gotten a couple sacks, and he might be the better player of those two. So it's those young guys, and they'll be out there some. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of we'll see whether they're starting to develop, but it's a work in progress.
Right. Keeping with the draft class, John, I was jealous of what the Ravens did. I thought they had one of the best drafts of anybody. I know you've had maybe a little bit of bad luck with some of the injury bugs of Stanley and a guy like Bronson Cufossi back in the spring. But what rookie has probably impressed you the most? Is it Stanley, the obvious first-round pick? Is it the guy like Tavon Young or Judon, or is it somebody else?
Well, Stanley was doing very well. I mean, people are very disappointed, you know, that he hasn't played in four games. I mean, a lot of these rookies, you know, when you take a number six pick in the draft, you're hoping for an immediate difference
right.
maker. And certainly they're getting it in Dallas, you know, with Elliott, and there's all sorts of stuff going on. So the Ravens are jealous about that. You know, where they've really gotten some nice production is from Tavon Young, a name you mentioned, as a cornerback. Fourth round pick. He's a slot cornerback, probably long standing. He's had to play outside some because of injuries, and he's a great athlete. He's got a couple of picks, and he looks like a piece of the puzzle going forward. He's small is the only thing, which is why people project him as a slot guy. But he's a player, and so I think they really like him. And really, the biggest surprise. Is an they have a history of undrafted free agents, and they have another one. Michael Pierce is his name. You will hear his name on Sunday, number 78. He's a perfectly round defensive tackle. Was an undrafted free agent, has been a difference maker from the beginning this season. As a matter of fact, if Brandon Williams leaves after this season, he will take over as nose tackle.
Oh, wow.
He has been a strong. I mean, he's obviously just getting going. He's a rookie, but he's been a strong interior player for them, and you know, he will be on the field.
John, before we get you out of here with your prediction for Sunday's game, you know, you've written quite a few books. Highlight one that you think Steeler fans might be interested in reading, and you know, anything else that you're working on forthcoming.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm in the midst of working on a book. It won't be out really for a couple of years, but I'm working on a book on the history, the founding fathers of the NFL, really the guys that carried it through the years when it was not a very popular sport. And of course, Art Rooney was one of those guys. So I've actually been doing quite a bit of writing and history about the very, very early days of you know, Art Rooney and the Steelers, you know, when they started as the Pirates, and all that stuff. So I'm talking about something that's not available for sale yet, but it is. I've been enjoying doing that, and you know, I've definitely been sort of knee deep in some Steeler history lately, which is pretty interesting. You know, that stuff. So that's a lot of fun. And I got a lot of cooperation from the organization, and it's really been a lot of fun. They don't seem to mind a guy coming from behind enemy lines to do that. So that's great. So I'm working on that right now, and it's a lot of fun.
And you also write about the ponies a little bit too. So if any of our listeners, you know, it's easy to find John's stuff on Amazon. John Eisenberg, he's got quite a few, you know, horse racing and jockey books up there as well too. All right, John, the moment of truth. We don't know if Roethlisberger's going to play on Sunday, and even if he does, he hasn't had a great history when playing the Ravens in Baltimore. He doesn't have a great history in his first game back from injury during his career. What say you about this game?
For those reasons, I think he will play. Just knowing Ben and his history, I think he'll probably end up playing. I think it'll be a Baltimore win. The home field is going to make a difference. The Ravens, both teams are desperate. The Ravens are really desperate, and I think that'll make a difference. You know, I don't know what's going to happen long-term with the standings in these two teams this year. I mean, Pittsburgh might have a little bit of an edge, but this weekend I see the Ravens coming out on top. Close game, not that high scoring, 23-20.
All right, fair enough. And we will, of course, be catching up with you right around Christmas time when these two teams get together again. Folks, you can always follow John on Twitter, at BMoreEisenberg. Make sure you clutter up his timeline a little bit by tweeting him and letting him know how much you appreciate him being on the show as well. Say, hey, John, you know we love you, and we appreciate you being on the Terrible Podcast once again.
Well, I do hear from your listeners. I do enjoy it. And, yeah, keep them coming. It's a lot of fun.
Boy, Alex, John Eisenberg, always a treat, right?
Yeah, I was very happy and appreciative to be on this time to get to talk to John. He has great answers, and definitely check out the book. I can't wait for that book he's working on. You know I'm a big football historian, love to hear about the early days of the NFL and its roots. So I know that book's still a little ways away, but I'm going to definitely pick it up once it's released.
Yeah, and I have on my shopping list as well, too, to get the one he wrote about the, you know, Vince Lombardi as well, too. Get my hands on that. But John has forever been a gracious guest to the show. Very humble guy, very you know, straight and to the point, doesn't mince his words any as well too. So once again, we appreciate John being on the show, and if you're listening, make sure you reach out to John on Twitter and let him know how much you appreciate him. I know those guys like to hear from listeners and know that their work is being heard outside of their own organization there. Before we move into the final to close the show out, Alex, if any of the listeners are readers of Steelers Depot, we have been trying to battle this annoying pop-up thing for some time now, especially when it comes to mobile users. If you're getting these, you know, sometimes I'm on mobile and I don't experience, you know, because of the phone I'm using, and maybe Alex doesn't experience something. If you get these type of annoying pop-ups on the site, you know, that redirect you to either like the iTunes App Store, or just some weird pop-up, just, you know, lose 50 pounds in 4 days or something like that. Let us know about it. Send us a screenshot of it, maybe the time that the pop-up happened, maybe the phone that you're on. We're actively trying to weed out these with our advertisers. You can do so by sending that information to admin@SteelersDepot.com, or you can send it to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. As well too. Alex and I have been working on this for some time now, and we think we're getting a little bit better handle on it, but we know it's still an irritating thing. And of course, as all of you know, ads are a necessary evil for us to keep this site running the way that it runs.
Right, and just to be clear, that pop-up that people have gotten, and I've gotten it before, I know you've gotten it before, I know people have commented about it, that's not intentional. Those aren't the ads that are supposed to be coming up. That is some just unintended consequence, so that is not us deliberately trying to do that, or those are not ads that we have accepted for the site. Those are just some weird glitches, and Dave has worked a lot harder than I have trying to figure this out and talk to the right people. So that's definitely unintentional on our part, where we're doing our best to fix it, and I think we've curbed it a lot better than from where it's been at, but certainly we'll make sure it's eliminated here sometime in the near future.
Yeah, we frown on automatic redirects. I mean, you should, if you click on an ad, that's one thing, knowing that where you're going, but you should never be taken off to somewhere that you did not ask to go, and we certainly do apologize for that, and as I said, we're trying to fix that as well, too. And trying to figure out this ad problem with Steelers Depot is as difficult and challenging as getting a mortgage on a house, Alex. And folks, you should let Craig Oxen guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams. Even in Cleveland, if you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Alex, you got anything else to wrap up this show so we can get out of here?
No, like, there's my train, so I'm going to go.
All right, get on that train. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. Follow my co-host, David Todd, at David M. Todd on Twitter. Follow Alex Cazora on Twitter, at Alex underscore Cazora. You can always follow the show, too, at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to donate to the cause and help out, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com and clicking the donate button in the upper right navigational bar. Until Friday. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, and today, Alex Cazora.